attackers have to succeed only one in a million times. But for organizations, they have to succeed million times out of million attacks, right? So that is how you protect your infrastructure. That is how hard it is.
You're listening to KBcast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Rajesh Ganesan, president for ManageEngine. And today, we're discussing why Australia is the last in the world for AI adoption. So Rajesh, thanks for joining. It's absolutely wonderful to have you here and to join us on the show today.
My pleasure to KB. Thanks for having me today.
Okay, so Rajesh, I really want to start with, now, you've made this statement that why Australia is the last in the world for AI adoption. Now, that kind of does make me nervous considering there are 195 countries in the world and you're saying that we're last. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Does sound a little bad, but we did not intend to say what you just said. Australia is definitely not last on this particular thing. To clarify a few things, to put things in perspective, so to say, this was based on a study, a survey that we did across the world 6 months ago, sometime late last year. We did not go do this study across all 195 countries. So for Australia to be number 195, we picked 15 countries across the world covering all the major continents, right? So North America, South America, Europe, Asia, Asia Pacific, all of that. So among this, some parameters, Australia did come on top. And there are a couple of things which sort of became very headline worthy, which is what got picked up by a lot of people, particularly people interpreting the survey, the study that we did at ManageEngine. So one of the specific things is you have all these enterprises using a technology to run their operations, to run their business. So the adoption of specific technologies like artificial intelligence and machine learning by the technology department inside the business. That was the very specific question. So this was a survey run across 15 different countries. So Australia, the response that we got, right? So we had response coming in from 4,000 organizations across the world, right? So a few hundred from the ANZ region. So of this, the results that we got, 27% of organizations across Australia and New Zealand have already adopted AI and ML. And this compares slightly less, relatively less to the global average, which is 44, which is why this could be interpreted as Australia is the last, but it's not to mean Australia is last. And there is another interesting statistic from that study, which is the application of these technologies, artificial intelligence, more so machine learning in combating cyber attacks, right? So Australia is about 50% number of organizations who are already using these technologies to combat cyber threat is about 50% in Australia, comparing 57% of what it is globally, right? So I would say Australia is catching up, not falling behind or last, right? So this also depends on the maturity levels of the organizations, the base with which they start, the operational maturity, the technology maturity, a lot of factors. But like how we started, the situation is certainly not as grim, right? So Australia is like not standing at the last or like not knowing what to do, nothing like that. So I just wanted to put this in perspective, KB, to start with. So in terms of adoption, there's a lot of scope, a lot of ground to cover, but a lot of initiatives, progress are also being made, right? So that's how I'll respond to this question.
Yeah, and thanks for that clarification. Look, I know it probably wasn't the last out of the 195, but it was just generally like always curious because I asked that question because, you know, depends on what it is. Like everyone's always saying like, oh, Australia's always last, or last for adoption, last in this, last in that. But sometimes it's just sort of hard as an Australian person to hear that because obviously we do want to be leading. But I also think it comes down to we're quite a small nation, you know, only 26 million people. So I think sometimes you know, we are a large country, like, on the surface, but in terms of, like, population, like, we're not. So maybe sometimes that's why we're lagging behind in some of these things. And I guess, you know, I've interviewed many people over the years, and there are many who say that Australia is, you know, slow to adopt, as I mentioned before, whether we're behind in X or Y, which, again, upsets me. But I'm just curious, like why is this the case? Like, why are us Aussies slow? And I'm curious to hear maybe from your point of view that you've, you know, you've done with the research to get sort of a little bit of insight.
Of course, yeah. I hear what you say, KB. I also sort of tend to agree with that. And to clarify a few things, I don't live in Australia. I live in India, right? So a completely different country, different demographics, especially in the last 10 years. And also I've been, even though I don't live in Australia, I've been visiting Australia very frequently, at least from 2014, right? So every year I come about 3 to 4 times, visit Australia 3 to 4 times at least, except during the years of the pandemic. I have a good measure of how things run, how we do business with many organizations in Australia. A lot of things, right? So we are specifically talking about one context here. When you say Australia is last, it is about the cutting edge technology adoption. So how fast can you move in terms of knowing about what technologies could you leverage, what technologies could you actually have the expertise to, like, ditch the investments made, right? So say, for example, countries like India or like countries in Latin America and Africa, in the last 2-3 years, they seem like raising ahead. But the factor, like, a lot of people overlook is we are young countries. We had not made a lot of technology investments in the last 20, 30 years. But take countries like the USA or the UK or many first world countries, including Australia. There's been a lot of investment that has gone in into the legacy technology. So it's a huge decision from the government side to all these public enterprises, big enterprises, to be able to let the legacy technology go and adopt the recent one, right? So we have to look at all these data points that we are talking about in the right context. So Australia could be lagging in terms of adopting the most recent cutting-edge technology, and that is for some valid reason. So one, that is because Australia has already gone ahead with a lot of investments in old technology, legacy technology. Moving out of it is a big challenge, right? Because you have built infrastructure, you have built expertise, you have built talent around those technologies, right? And following up to this point, the reason for the challenges or the struggle primarily is because of the talent shortage, particularly when it comes to the most recent technologies, right? So you are struggling to find talent. You are struggling to also retain talent because talent goes where the opportunity is, right? So as simple as that, it's a natural law. When you have a lot of legacy technology, when you have decision-making taking a lot of time, people automatically move to where the action is, where the traction is, so to say, right? So this is one of the reasons to me personally. And also things like culture and how people typically work. I told you about how I visit Australia very frequently. I go visit customers across the world, KB, right? So part of my job requires me to go visit customers. I visit customers all the time in India, in Europe, in North America. All these places, business meetings would happen usually very, very formally. It would be in a conference room. It's already been reserved 2-3 weeks back, right? So everything happens very formally. But come to Australia, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, right? Whether it is my business meeting with C-level executives, right? So, or I'm talking to people in technology who are very hands-on, or people like you in the media, almost all of my meetings have been on coffee shops, right? It doesn't matter it's Monday morning or like Wednesday afternoon, right? So if you have any meeting, yeah, that's a fact, right? So it doesn't matter. Any meeting always happens in a coffee shop. It's good. It works well for you. It's very productive. But when we are talking about applying technology or when we are talking about cyber threats, right? Imagine I was sitting on a meeting. I was very mindful and watchful of what I was saying because I come from a place where, like, people around all the time, you have a sense of being looked at, right? So, but people in Australia, the culture is like all the meetings happen in coffee shop. They're like completely not mindful of what's happening on the next table. But imagine a cyber threat actor coming to Australia, right? So with completely wrong intentions, this culture is suddenly like not working for you. This is putting you at a disadvantage. So you are having easy access to executives, their devices, the network they are connected on, because people choose different coffee shops for different meetings, right? So I was really wondering, asking these questions. These are also factors that are very, very cultural, right? So because suddenly you cannot tell your CEO to not have meetings in coffee shops. Say you are responsible for cybersecurity in the organization. For an Australian enterprise, the person, the chief security officer, suddenly cannot wake up and go tell their people, from today, your meetings have to be inside the building, right? So these are factors. I talked about talent, I talked about the culture, and also comes from policies, right? So all of these factors, and also the investments that have gone in with legacy technologies, like multiple factors have to be considered for why the adoption is slow, KB. This is like a lot of food for thought. These are conversations we have with a lot of Australian customers, right? So the problem is not just technology, right? So the problem is at multiple dimensions, multiple levels. So the first point is to be able to be aware of where you stand, right? So in all these dimensions, and start to address one by one, right? From your talent, how you train your talent, how you channel your investments, how you build expertise, how you retain that talent, how you balance your culture, how you operate, all of that have to come together for you to go up. And I'll give you an interesting stat to end this particular question. So I had an opportunity to talk to the head of cybersecurity for the UAE government, right? So recently, so there is a ranking system for the cybersecurity posture of various nations, right? So which I wasn't aware of. So I cannot give you specific details. And he was telling me UAE ranked somewhere like not in the very top, right? So, but they took it as a challenge. All the points that I mentioned, starting with culture, starting with training people, retaining people, getting the best talent from across the world for cybersecurity. So in about 2 to 2.5 years, they were able to improve the ranking to like to be in the top 2 or 3, right? So this is the stand that Australia also have to take. They have to take, so to not be left behind. So the situation is not as grim as we are talking about. These are easily fixable as long as you are aware of the various dimensions that I talked about, and you have people taking care of each one of those, fix it. So things should all be okay.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there, Rajesh, I'm curious to know more about. So when you said the culture and the coffee shop, so what's the correlation between doing meetings in coffee shops, which you are absolutely right, that is a big thing. It's a very big coffee culture here. I have to say it is probably best in the world. But what's the conclusion? How do you draw the conclusion between the technology adoption to the coffee shops?
Yeah. So the correlation I made was about cybersecurity particularly, right? So I talked about applying technology to be on top of your security attacks that could come in. Imagine a big part of your workforce do their official work, the corporate work, sitting outside the office. So which means they are taking the corporate devices to the coffee shop network. So the vectors for the attack, we call it the attack surface, that is like far, far bigger, right? So so long it did not matter, right? So today we have to understand even the adversaries are becoming very smart. They have all the technology. They use a lot of cutting edge technology to create and run attacks, right? And the motivations are like far and wide. They do it for financial gains. There are state actors, right? So today, nations always want to like, we never know, it could, the reasons could be political, the reasons could be financial, but if most of your critical infrastructure, like most of your top executives are going to be working in this fashion, you need to have a very, very solid security framework for how you operate, right? So the point I was making is for any adversary, any attacker to come into Australia, the attack vectors or the attack surface area is relatively far easier because of the easy access they have to people, their devices, their applications, right? So because you talk about the reasons for most of the important cyber attacks, right? It is typically things like phishing or social engineering, right? So you just have to have some access to the person. It becomes all the more easier to carry out cyber attacks. So I was just giving you this one specific example of the culture, right? So which makes it very difficult for security leaders inside Australian enterprises to secure their complete infrastructure, right? So whereas if you have a completely different culture where people have clear demarcation, I do all my office work only from inside the office or from approved locations. So if this is the case, it is a lot easier for people who are responsible for cybersecurity to have policies defined, right? So, but now when you have no control over where people go, where people connect their devices, who they talk to, all of that, who could be like doing shoulder attack and all of this, it becomes all the more difficult. You need a lot more talent, you need a lot more expertise, a lot more technology, right? This is the challenge that we are talking about, specific to that one example of culture. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely absolutely does make sense. And I hear what you're saying around sort of the tech service and everything like that. But would you say that it's sort of like null and void only because like with COVID, everyone working from wherever now, working from their homes, like, you know, we've gone beyond our four walls. So I definitely hear what you're saying, but maybe that sort of doesn't matter as much as it used to because now people are working from wherever nowadays.
Right, absolutely. Which is why even for hybrid work, you need to have clear policies defined, right? So what are the locations that a person is supposed to work? If that is known ahead in time, right? So in the model that a particular company operates in, it's a lot more easier to protect, right? So you could, the team responsible for security could give recommendations on what kind of strength the network should have, right? So this could be dictated. There could be a budget. I could be working from home most of the time, but I will have to build my home network with the specification that my corporate security team dictates. But if I'm going to sit on a coffee shop, I cannot have the same level of security specifications delivered by a restaurant or a coffee shop, right? So that is the point I'm making, okay? So these are very important. So this is why I said like it starts from policy, the expertise and all of that, right? So at some point, you will also have to let people live their life the way they want, right? You cannot also suddenly have a dictum saying no more work from coffee shop. This means the team responsible for cybersecurity have to invest in a lot more technology, right? So we have technologies like unified endpoint management, right? So which we build in ManageEngine. So the device that people use should have a lot of intelligence in detecting if any attack is happening through that particular device, not just be able to detect, should have the ability to immediately respond to any of the threat, right? If a malware is coming in, somebody trying to social engineer and take over the complete device, right? So any anomaly like that should be immediately be detected right inside the device and action should be taken. Like we talk about the self-diagnosis, self-remediation and self-healing, right? All of these capabilities have to be there in the device and people should have the right training because you are not going to have your head of sales, right? So be very, very tech savvy. But that is not an excuse for them to click any link that comes their way, right? So it starts from investing in technology. It starts from investing in training people, all of that. So what I was trying to say is like to have this awareness. So how do you work? What is your posture? Where do you stand? What technologies do you have? What is the talent that you have in your organization? Have a good measure of what are the attacks that are happening on your network? And I came across some stats specific to Australia, right? In terms of per capita cyber attack, Australia's like, again, rating on top, because obviously you have a much less population, right? It's about 25, 26 million population. So, but the number of attacks that happen is way too large for the per capita data, right? So these are factors that technology leaders, security leaders should be aware of your posture and be able to invest in right technology, right training, right people, like retaining talent and all of that, to be able to stay on top of situations like this.
Yeah, and thanks for clarifying that. And I think that, you know, this is important for people to understand, because again, like a lot of the stats that you've sort of talked about today is part of the point of what I want to address. So I want to go to a specific stat that I'm part of your survey, and some of the key findings that I'm aware of is in the ANZ IT departments ranked last in using AI and machine learning to combat cyber attacks. And then I guess among the last in using these technologies to automate tasks, and that was 54%. So just before I get you to answer that, I mean, that's again last, but it's just more so like from what you said before around if you use the coffee shop example, like it's probably signaling to me that, you know, we talk about awareness and executives knowing this, but then maybe they don't really have the right awareness, because yes, the attack service from what you said would mean that they do need to do the investment. But you're sort of saying that the adoption is slower to technologies historically, you know, in Australia and also moving forward, especially with the recent research that you did. So talk to me a little bit more about this.
I will do that, right? So the numbers like that you just talked about, again, the study that we do, the response that we received is from a small cross-section of the organization. I would say like I talk to customers like regularly, if not on a daily basis. Like we have our customer-facing teams talking to customers on a daily basis. We have a good measure of what the customers want, right? So specifically Australian organizations, organizations from the ANZ region. So we cannot say there is no awareness, right? So there is awareness, but what is also happening is, we talked about people working from wherever they are. Because we are opening up so much, it also becomes so much easier for attackers to gain access, right? So this is something we have to keep talking, keep thinking repeatedly. Because the more convenience that we give our workforce, it becomes all the more important, all the more easy for attackers also, right? Because all it takes is if you're a few thousand employee organization, all it takes is one unassuming employee to click that one wrong link, right? So you get a ransomware into the network and everything is gone. So this is an often repeated point. Attackers have to succeed only one in a million times, right? So for them to claim success, but for organizations, they have to succeed million times out of million attacks, right? So that is how you protect your infrastructure. That is how hard it is. That is where these numbers, right? So only 27% of the organizations even adopting technologies, only 50% of the organization adopting technologies like AI and ML for combating cyber threats. What are some of the use cases? When I say like only 50% apply for combating cybersecurity threats, these are things like detecting anomalies, right? So when a malware or a ransomware comes in into a device, into an application, could be through a laptop, could be through any of the devices that a corporate executive uses, right? So it cannot even have that 10-20 second gap. Right, so for people to click something, click an executable that gets into their device, it stays dormant for 30 days, and then like suddenly it starts to wake up and do all the damages. This is how attackers play today. Their methods are very sophisticated, which means the defense has to be even more advanced and sophisticated, right? Which is where companies struggle. Which is why only 27% say we have adopted technology, because they know the kind of attacks they are subjected to. It is very, very sophisticated. It could be things like what I talked about, right? So malware and ransomware, it could be denial of service attacks, right? So it could be command and control. There are so many ways of doing this. Identity impersonation. So as companies today, like we are a cloud company, Manage Engine, we run a lot of cloud services. We assume we are always under attack, right? That is how we operate. Every single day, 24/7, we assume we are under attack, and that is how we design and deploy our defense systems, right? So at every component, at every layer of technology, of people, of our operations, we have cybersecurity defense mechanism. You need to have systems that detect what is going wrong, that respond immediately when something appears to go wrong, right? So fix the situation, all of that. So this is what companies struggle with, right? So relatively easy for companies like Manage Engine because we have this technology DNA, so to say. A lot of companies have that. But take, for example, companies dealing with supply chain, right? So companies whose core focus area is manufacturing or hospitality or healthcare, right? So their budget for technology is under review all the time. Their budget for security is under review all the time. So these are the challenges for these low numbers, right? And then comes the fact that you already have invested a lot in security, a lot in technology, but if you have to upgrade technology every year, right? So it calls for more budget. These are factors we hear from our customers, right? So you told us about ransomware last year. We applied some technology to defend against all those things. But this year, the scene completely changes, right? Because say, for example, in the dark internet, right? So we talk about cryptocurrencies and all of that. Today, attackers create a ransomware and they want to take money through crypto exchanges, right? So which means there are absolutely no trails anywhere. This is the kind of sophistication we are seeing from the other side, the adversaries. So people don't know how to react to this, how much to invest, which is why we still see low numbers. But in terms of when you ask people how many of them want to adopt, want to deploy technologies for this, almost all of them would say, yes, we want to. But the numbers are low with people who have actually deployed some system, some mechanism, and it is growing all the time. So this is the observation we have from particularly the ANZ region.
So let's just go back to that 50% number for a moment. What are you sort of seeing in other parts of the world? So like, I don't know, North America or even the United Kingdom, would you say that's substantially higher than 50%? And if so, how much higher?
Not really, right? So the global average is at 57% KB. So which is why I would say Australia is catching up very quickly and not lagging behind, right? We are not talking about 50% in Australia and like 90% rest of the world, because all the points that I mentioned applies across the globe, right? Because you can imagine, right? So when something like the pandemic happened, the entire world panicked, right? We didn't know how to react. The same is the case with the technology infrastructure, because every day you are finding new ways of being attacked, right? So when that happens, no matter whatever investment you have already pumped in, whatever you already have, may not be enough. You are finding out constantly that you have to develop more expertise, invest in more technology, which is why people never feel that conviction that they are 100% secure all the time. Which is why you see this 57% is the global average. And Australia is like pretty close. You're at 50 and it's progressing all the time.
So going into more statistics, there's another statistic that I've read from your survey that ANZ ranked worst for employees outside the IT department improving technical skills compared to with pre-pandemic. So that's 67%. So how did you get to this conclusion?
Yeah, I mean, this conclusion, right? So again, this is survey results directly from the customer base that we have, right? I was in Australia in 2022. This is my personal observation. I could see even cities like Melbourne, right? So always buzzing with energy, but with not a lot of people around. So I was asking people in restaurants, I was asking customers. One of the things that they said is like a lot of people that left Australia during the pandemic were still not coming back. They were either not coming back or they're still thinking about coming back. So, which again goes back to the talent shortage, right? So, the same point about talent shortage. So, the conclusion that we are making, right? So, the level of expertise or the level of knowledge of technology in or outside IT departments is starting to reduce, primarily because you don't have enough people, right? So, this is exactly the conversation I've had with customers in Australia last year. They're finding it very, very hard to sort of find people. I saw another stat, interestingly. Organizations in Australia particularly, about, this is not from our survey, this is from a different survey, 60% of them say like finding talent is like has become very hard or very, very hard. They are 60% of the organizations are not able to find the right talent to work in technology, right? So the global average is somewhere around 20, right? So this is a cause for concern. So the conclusion primarily goes back to talent not being available, KB, right? So probably pre-pandemic, you had a lot of people who migrated to Australia, like working on all these areas. But once that happened, when people moved back, you don't have enough people, right? So at this point, hopefully that situation changes now. But this survey ran last year, specific to the situation we had sometime around September, October of 2022, right? So with that specific context is what we are talking about. Compared to pre-pandemic, middle of 2022, we found a lot of organizations struggling with talent shortage around the technology, which means we are like starting to say like they are struggling with running technology.
So that other survey, you said 60% in Australia, but then around the world it was 20. So that's a 40% delta. So that's quite significant.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Even like I was a little taken aback by that, right? So 60% of the organizations from Australia say this, right? So finding talent become very difficult. Yeah.
So would you say hypothetically, yes, we're a small nation, this say arbitrary number, 25 million. I think there's 26 million now, but this is, you know, 25 million rounded off. If we went to 50 million, would you say that 60% would start to sort of decrease a little bit more, or because we've got more people then, or that doesn't really solve the problem?
I mean, interesting question, right? Interesting thought experiment. When you go to 50 million, right? So a country like Australia, from what I understand, you have your native population growing and you also will have a lot of immigrants coming in, right? So there is a good percentage of people coming into Australia, migrating to Australia. So the kind of talent that we are talking about, like the younger generation who are in school, who will go to university, their interest, right? So say for example, a demographic like Africa or India. So we have like a lot of people getting into the STEM area, right? So science, technology, maths. So this is like what we are talking about. It's not just about like one or two factors. It comes from the policy, the culture, the demographics and all of that. So when Australia doubles in population, both natively and people coming in, it really depends on the kind of policies that you have, like how much does the government and all the businesses around understand the need for technology, understand the need for improving the cybersecurity posture. From all of that, you start to invest, right? So right from young children going to the school, give them the right awareness. So this is going to be important for Australia as a country. So this is a viable career option. This is a viable skill to have, right? So for you to have a thriving career for like decades going forward, all of that matter. And I would be optimistic. So looking at things happening around the world, so talking to companies around the world, so there's a lot of awareness, right? So like as we are talking about, there is a little uncertainty when it comes to talent. But the future generation, I see a lot of interest, a lot of awareness getting into technology, right? So getting into particularly cybersecurity. So those things, right? So addressed at the policy level, addressed at execution should be taken care of well.
Yeah, okay. And that definitely makes sense. And I think, I mean, there's so many factors in that as well. But one of the things I want to ask you about quickly is someone messaged me yesterday on LinkedIn. They're like, hi, KB, I work in IT. I'm trying to get a job in cyber, but it's becoming, you know, quite hard. So I think it depends like who you are. So there's always people like, you know, arguing on LinkedIn or wherever saying, oh, we've got enough talent. What are we talking about? But then other people are like, no, we don't have enough sort of talent. So what would be your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, you probably heard both sides to each of those arguments. And I do see both points, but I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. So you hear both sides. So I'll talk from my personal experience, right? So how we run ManageEngine as a company. So we take the approach of like being very patient, right? So we don't want to complain there is a talent shortage. We are not finding talent. Rather, we take the approach of building and nurturing the talent, right? So that is how it really works. So we are a company that has been around for the last 25 years. So we do go to universities, colleges, but we primarily believe we have to create the talent, right? So we have our own school, we have our own training methodology, because something like cyber, right? So our cybersecurity, or things like privacy, things like building your own technology stack, these are all deep subjects, right? So you cannot expect people coming with superpowers, right? Appearing in front of you, ready to join you, ready to do work for your company, right? So these are expectations that are very stretched. So what should really happen is like have an open mind, have patience, create and build your own talent, nurture your own talent. This is how it works. At least this is how it has worked for us, right? So I see a lot of business leaders talking about this, right? So we don't find talent. And also people talking about, I have talent, I am not able to find opportunities. Why are they not able to find opportunities? Because of the expectations not matching. So when companies talk to them, they expect them to be 100% ready, which people cannot be, right? So after all these years, I cannot be 100% at everything. But as long as I am aware of the context, the problem areas I'm working on, I'm learning all the time, right? So this is how both the people that are entering the workforce, that's the perspective they should have, and also the organizations, right? So that are going for talent, they should also have the same open mind. So be willing to accept people as they are, and invest in training them, right? So nurturing their talent, and this really works. And a lot of times, companies don't have this patience. They are always like in the lookout for people, which is why you also see, particularly in cybersecurity area, I talked about being able to retain talent, right? So one is finding talent. The other point is the retention of the talent. Companies are poaching, right? So talent from other companies. So this is not doing any collective good for nations, right? So for companies. So these are some philosophical thoughts I would give you if you ask me these questions. Where are talent? Because people have the talent, right? So we have to match it with the right opportunity, right context, right? So on the right culture.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I've interviewed a fair few people on this show talking about, like, you know, how do we, like you mentioned before, retain the talent is a bigger problem, but getting the talent in the door is the first part. But it's also like, you know, when you're looking for a junior person that has 10 years of experience, you're probably not going to get that. You're not going to get them with 1,000 degrees and all the certifications. So I think there needs to be some learning on that front. But I guess it's going to be time for people to mature towards, okay, you know, you don't have 10 years, but you've got two, like, that's enough, and we've got to train you and grow you more. Are you starting to see that shift happen around the world with some of your travels on people understanding that a little bit more? Because, again, cybersecurity or information security is, like, relatively new compared to, I don't know, like law or something like that.
No, absolutely right. So I have the same observation, right? So people are starting to realize something like cybersecurity, you cannot have any textbook covering the whole of cybersecurity, right? So as we are talking about, attackers are finding new ways of doing attacks every single day, right? And we talk about attacks emanating from insiders, right? So that is a much bigger threat. you could be like building all the systems, right? So to defend your perimeter of the network, people and all that. But when you have someone internal, right? So turning hostile against you, what could you do, right? So security is not easy. Any amount of certification, so it cannot be covered just with textbook. It's a continuous process, continuous journey, right? So you are absolutely right. So companies are starting to realize this. You cannot expect talent that is going to come with superpowers and like change things overnight. That's not going to happen. You have to get talent. So give them the promise, give them the right environment. So the right clarity of how their career would be, all of that is very important. But I'm happy to say, right? So I'm starting to see the signs. People now understand they cannot expect to have people that come ready to do cybersecurity from day one, right? So that is a good sign, and this is across the world, right? So that is the trend that we see.
And I guess like my final question then for you would be, there was another stat in the report that it mentions that 82% of ANZ respondents either strongly agree or somewhat agree that AI will play a significant role in strengthening their organization's IT security framework in the near future. So would you say that 82% will sort of turn into like people actually leveraging it, because like some people strongly agreed, some people somewhat agreed. Like, would you say that that number will increase and that will be more on the strongly agreed front?
So yeah, interesting you asked this, because like I said, this study happened a while ago when this thing called ChatGPT was not quite the thing, right? So if you ask people now across the world, with specifically ChatGPT, so this number would be much, much higher, because the sentiment that I see across the world is not to be left behind now when it comes to adopting artificial intelligence, right? So when we did this study last year, even then, the general sentiment was people knew the possibilities, the powers of using such technologies. The intent was always there, right? So which is why you see 82% number. Now, with all the possibilities that they see on a daily basis, what it could do, the number should be much, much higher, right? So this has always been there. The problem was with clearly knowing, right? So even with something like ChatGPT, right? Or I should not use that word. So I should talk about this AI technology that uses LLM, the large language models that understand natural language. So the point here is like knowing to use it effectively, right? So there are terms now called prompt engineering, right? So really depends on how you frame your question that you get right solutions from such technologies, right? So the point is you have technology on one side, but on the other side, you still will have to have knowledge, expertise, and the talent to be able to leverage in the right way so that it contributes to your actual objectives, right? So that is where you have people with the right intent. So today, more than 90% would say, yes, we would use. But where the adoption would really go down is not 100% knowing how to use optimally, right? This would again be the challenge for a lot of organizations going forward. So to answer your question, the number is going to only go up. But if you ask them a different question, yeah, you are adopting those technologies, but how much do you actually get out of that, right? So your returns on investment, meeting your expectations, like ticking all the objectives list that you have, that remains to be seen. But something like an LLM, like things like what are the few things that it can do really, really well, right? So it can have conversation as much as any human on the other side, right? Sometimes even better. So your customer service could completely be sort of given away to a chatbot system that uses a LLM in the backend. It can really do some good prompt-based solution consulting, right? So when people have problems, right? So you want to analyze a lot of data, come up with the right solution. There you have to apply this. And also when you have like really, really large chunk of data, but you want to figure out the top three insights or the top three action items. When you have 100 pages of data, but you only want to know the two action items that you should be doing from those data, this can take like about time in the order of days or weeks before. Now you give it to a system like ChatGPT, it can summarize and give you these two action points in like a matter of 3 to 5 seconds, right? So knowing these powers, generating these data, keeping this data ready is like going to be a challenge, right? So you have to prepare yourself to be able to use these systems. And also on the other side, we talk about all the powers of the system. These systems are also the most attacked, right? So even ChatGPT got broken recently. And there are also factors like how much data can you actually share with these systems, right? So the privacy, all those angles are important. So what I'm trying to say is, though there is a good intent from people in using these technologies, there is again going to be a lot of barriers, right? Where you have to stop and watch on how to use it optimally, how to use it effectively, knowing what could go wrong. Do you have the right systems to protect you from using these systems without any side effects, so to say, right? So all of this is going to matter. So to sort of summarize, yes, more and more companies at some point, 100% of the businesses would use these technologies, but using them effectively would again need people with the right talent, right knowledge, and right expertise, right? So that is how I'd summarize.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think time's going to tell. Like each week, new things keep coming out and it perplexes me and I love it. It's still interesting but scary at the same time. But, you know, that's the world that we live in now. So in terms of any final thoughts or closing comments, Rajesh, is there anything specific you'd like to leave our audience with today?
Nothing specifically, but your point on like we live in times that is both scary and interesting. I would say just interesting, right? So there is no need to be scared about this, right? So we also had people writing open letters to slow down the pace of learning of these AI systems. But I sort of tend to have this optimistic view, right? So this is how technology should evolve. Like it's like obviously very interesting. I would not be very scared, but I'll just be a little cautious and be aware of what I really need to do and not be too greedy, right? So if you treat the system that way, like I'm very sure like that is going to treat me the same way back as well. So.
Well, I guess it's just who you ask, because sometimes people are scared, but I think it's interesting. I'm more on the interested side than I am on the scared side. So Rajesh, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed today's interview, understanding a little bit more about, you know, the survey and some of the insights, and of course having you on the show and, you know, getting to know you a little bit more. So thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, KB. I appreciate the opportunity. Yes.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by Mercsec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit mercsec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.